we have had many interesting experiences in the building. There is something there, and if you don't believe me, you can ask our police officers.
That's Sherry Mullenix.
You know, over the years, people just, they forgot what it was.
Only about 1,500 feet away from the only Arby's in the little town of Douglas, Wyoming, is one of the seemingly most boring-looking buildings in the world.
And it's a very plain building. I mean, certainly from the outside, there's nothing to recommend it.
It's a long one-story structure with about 10 windows on either side and a very tall brick chimney. If you've ever seen or lived in a barracks, that's what it will remind you of. And that's because it was built by the U.S. government in 1943. In less than 100 days, this unassuming old building, within walking distance of the drive-thru at Arby's, was built along with 179 other structures to hold prisoners of war from Italy and Germany. On this episode of That Doesn't Happen Every Day, in which we interview everyday people about things that don't normally happen every day, we find out why a former mayor and some of the police aren't sure if everybody moved on after the war ended.
It has just sucked me in over the years.
After all of the prisoners of war went home and they officially closed the camp, all of its buildings were dismantled or moved, except for the hospital, which the community started to use, and this old barracks-like structure, which had actually been the officers' club and would later have a lot of different uses over the years.
Dances there, family reunions, proms, all kinds of things that that building used to be used for.
In the early 1960s, the place took on a very different use.
You know, you have a ritual that you had to follow. You had to give the working sign. You know, some people do handshakes. You had a password so that you were actually authorized to be there.
That's Donna York, who was part of a new club that bought the old officers' club. Rita Prager talks about more of the new goings-on.
Well, they always had a prayer, and so they dimmed the lights. And you had a prayer at the start of the meetings, and you had one towards the end of the meetings.
You wear your robes, your degree paraphernalia that you wear, and stuff like that.
They have secret codes, and to be admitted during a meeting, you have to know the codes. Some of it's based on the Bible.
So what had they started doing in the old officers' club in little old Douglas, Wyoming?
The motto of the Odd Fellows is, visit the sick, relieve the stress, bury the dead, and educate the orphan.
Both Rita and Donna were members of the Independent Order of Odd Fellows, which had begun to use the building for their meetings. Well, what these women describe sounds a little strange, to say the least. The Independent Order of Odd Fellows, or IOOF, has actually been around for hundreds of years, and some of its members have included Charlie Chaplin, Wyatt Earp, and many U.S. presidents from Grant to Roosevelt. That promise to educate orphans and bury the dead might seem sort of archaic, but during a lot of the years of the Odd Fellows' existence, making sure someone took care of the dead because they can't take care of themselves, or orphan children who also cannot take care of themselves, was actually a really big deal before the number of private and government safety nets we've developed now. I was actually kind of disappointed when I heard of the most intense deeds this seemingly secretive organization was up to in Douglas.
One year we did food baskets and gave them for Christmas. Or if you wanted to do like bingo night and take the money and give it to the Arthritis Foundation. We used to have a lot of chicken noodle dinners, and we would donate that money to like the Rose Parade.
Honestly, it sounds a lot like going to a church or Scouts or the VFW or something like that. But you have to remember secret handshakes, and I doubt the robes they wear are the fluffy bathrobe kind that you get to just hang around in. Incidentally, if you do know of a secret club that's like that, please contact me, because I'm pretty sure those are my people.
Sherry went out there, and she opened the door, and she looked in there, and she says, do you know that you have two coffins out there? I said, yeah, I know there's two coffins out there.
So why did this benevolent organization have coffins?
The Odd Fellows in their degree were use a coffin. They had skeletons in the closet, in the coffins. Bury the dead.
I've actually linked three different news articles in the description, all talking about people who found old coffins or skeletons, some real, some fake, in former Odd Fellows meeting halls. I don't exactly know how the coffins and skeletons were used. However, some people say they were to remind members of their own mortality. I don't know if this is to teach them that life is fleeting or that there are consequences in the next life. It seems to be a common thing. Jill Pope's book, Haunted Cheyenne, mentioned how a building used by another old fraternal organization called the Knights of Pythias in downtown Cheyenne also was the scene of a discovery of a coffin with the remains of a teenage girl inside. That story used to scare me, but now I think perhaps it was used in a similar way by a similar group. Again, though, I am not an Odd Fellow or a member of the Knights of Pythias. These are pure conjectures. Despite Sherry's frightening discovery, she continued to go back to the Officers' Club even after the Odd Fellows no longer used it.
So I went in early one morning. I heard someone run the entire length of the building towards the other door at the other end of the building. And, I mean, not subtly run, like work boot run. And so I concluded that since it was really cold and it snowed the night before, a transient had probably broken into the building for shelter. So I just backed out, sat in my car, and called the police. They came down and they searched the entire building extremely thoroughly, and there's not that many places to hide. There was no one there. It had snowed the night before, and there were no footprints going in or out of the building except mine. And so I felt like a total idiot.
Sherry's strange encounters at the officers' club didn't end there.
I used to do ride-alongs with officers a lot because it's a great way to know about things in your community you wouldn't know any other way.
At the time of the story that Sherry's telling, she was actually the mayor of Douglas, which explained why she wanted a boots-on-the-ground experience of her town.
I was riding with one of the officers, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And we were driving by that building. As we drove by, he goes, "Oh, Mayor, we don't like that building." I said, How come? How come you don't like the building?" "Well, it's haunted." I said, "Really? How do you know that?" "Well, one night they were doing door checks and the building was unlocked. And so they went in, they go in, you know, when they do something like that, they go in flashlights, guns drawn, don't turn on any lights, went through the building, got to that hallway, heard somebody run the length of the building toward the other door. Thought, okay, good. That door at the other entrance at that time was nailed shut. So they thought, we got him. No place for him to go. Nobody in the building. They have seen a face looking out at them before. It's another group that we had. It's a group of survivors from domestic violence. They used to have their meetings there. They would sit in the kitchen, and there's a coat rack in that hallway, and all of a sudden, all the coat hangers on the coat rack would just start bouncing back and forth. We actually had a couple of different groups come in looking for ghostly phenomena in the building. The last group that came up, they were setting their cameras up and they wanted me to tell them different areas where they would be most likely to get some activity. And I said, "Well, that entryway down at the far end, you definitely want to put a camera there." And they got all the cameras set up and we were standing in the kitchen and they're looking at the monitor to make sure they've got the views they want. And there's no view coming from that camera. And so went to check it and the camera, the tripod's folded up and the camera's laying on the floor. And one of these groups was doing their investigation and they were getting some input, but they wanted more. And so they asked me if it was all right to try and kind of antagonize the spirit to see if they could get a stronger reaction. Anyway, it was the first time we'd done one. So I said, "Well, you know, I guess, you know, whatever." Well, it was a big mistake. They just talked really mean to it. And we have recordings of it going, "No, no, no." Essentially, they made it cry. They felt so badly about it that they actually came back a couple weeks later and asked me to let them in the building so they could apologize. And believe it or not, the interesting thing about that was right after that and following the other investigations we've had in the building and a couple of other times, I have had unusual experiences in my house. I come home at night and all of the drawers in my kitchen will be pulled open. And I live alone.
So how does Sherry feel about this old officers' club after all that has happened?
Well, I don't know why exactly. Because, I mean, it was a POW camp, for heaven's sake. But there is something sweet about that building.
In the last episode of this podcast, I talked a lot more about the actual POW camp and what life was like there, including how many POWs were treated quite well in the camp. Some of them even came back to Douglas after the war to work for people they'd met while serving as POWs. The paranormal folks have a theory about Sherry's relationship to the old building and why the ghost followed her home.
And they are convinced that they see me as a protector and that they came home with me. I don't know why I didn't seek the position, but I just love that building. The only way I've ever been able to describe it is I just feel like it's fairy godmother.
Thanks to the work of the fairy godmother of the Officers Club and many other concerned people, the old building has been saved and is now preserved, and you can arrange a visit to it at the link included in the description. I'd like to thank you for listening to That Doesn't Happen Every Day. I want to give a shout out to Mark Youngie, who recorded these oral histories, as well as to Sherry Molinix, Donna York, and Rita Prager. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show, do a search for That Doesn't Happen Every Day. Every day is two words in this case, podcast, and you can listen to all of the shows I've done in the past completely for free. Thank you again for listening. I hope to have a new episode to you in about 2 weeks.